Okay, let's turn in your Bibles to Romans chapter 12, verse 15. And a very important subject to talk about today. We're starting a new series that's entitled Speech Therapy. What meaneth this? Speech therapy. In other words, what is different ways of speaking, different languages that we can speak in our life that actually are therapeutic to other people? Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. I want to talk to you today about something entitled Empathy Speak. Empathy Speak. Before I get to that, I'll tell you a little bit of a story. We went on a summer vacation this year to Seaside, where we normally go. We love Seaside. Anyway, there's a movie theater over there, and usually on a typical Hewins family vacation, we'll go to a movie. I happened to go to a movie on this vacation, and Angie and the kids were shopping, and we had two cars. Long story short, I had to buy a pair of shoes. I wanted to get a pair of casual shoes that I could just kind of knock around in, and get up in the morning, get on a bicycle, and go get coffee in the middle of town. So I go to the outlet store, and I'm going through this place. I'm going to all the decent shoe shops. I can't find anything. I wear a size 14. Like, it's not like you're going to order anything online on vacation and get it there the next day. You know what I'm saying? That's work. So I find myself in Payless Shoe Store, which has about two pairs of shoes, size 14, by the way. I don't know what kind of lapse of judgment, what came over me, some kind of temporary, just like brain freeze. I don't know what it was, but I was looking for a pair of like Docksider shoes, and I pulled this pair off, and sure enough, they were my size, and they were, I don't know, it's just something to get me through vacation. They were like $22. I said, all right, I'm going to get these. So I go to the girl at the counter, and we trade credit card for the actual shoes. So, as is the custom, you know, you've been out in the hot sun all day, you're going to go take a shower, then you're going to go get an overpriced dinner. That's what you do on vacation. So we're getting ready to go to dinner, and I put on my new shoes, and I've got this uneasy feeling about the shoes. I'm realizing now, like, I'm in my right mind. I don't know where I was earlier. As though I was inebriated, but I wasn't. And I looked down at the shoes, and I thought, oh my gosh, what have I done? That's what my dad said to me when I came home with a perm one day. And back in the day when it was like semi-acceptable, he looked at me and goes, son, what have you done? Well, I looked down at my shoes, and I go, what have you done? And sure enough, there's my son standing there ready to go to dinner. And I look at my son, and I said, Joel, I fear I have purchased slippers. And he looks at him and he goes, Dad, why are you afraid? They are slippers. I purchased like a genuine, what I thought was a genuine shoe, but I ended up with a pair of slippers. And I went to dinner in them just out of pride. And I looked like some guy who was given a furlough from the rest home to go out and have dinner and get back to the hospital. They're so soft in the sole, I can't walk across the gravel driveway without, like, stones going inside my heel. It was a horrible purchase. And then I got to looking at them some more, and I realized, oh, my gosh, not only are they slippers, Gary, you bought moccasins. You went for Docksiders, you got moccasins. What kind of idiot are you? And it reminds me of this message. You've heard this a million times. You never truly know a man till you walked a mile in his moccasins, right? I thought about that as I put this message together on empathy. Empathy. If we can learn to speak with empathy, one of the most important things we can do as followers of Christ, one of the most Christ-like things we can do as followers of Christ, we're not called to care about people. Most people think that's what we're supposed to do, care about people. The world is full of people who care about people. We're called to go a step further in the demonstration of our care. And that's what I want to talk to you today about, empathy. We have this verse in Romans 12 and 15. Paul writes it to the church in Rome, to whom he's never met. He says, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. It's interesting. Identify with those in your life and what they're experiencing and seek to identify, if not duplicate, the very experience yourself with them. Be it joyous or be it sorrow. What is this? Empathy. In a techno fast-paced world that we live in, empathy is becoming an endangered species. We're so quick to communicate with one another, and we can do that through technology, but even that, superficial relationships abound, and it's like you never really get underneath the matter. You never get behind the mask. You never really connect on a heart level. So empathy is going by the wayside if we're not careful. So vitally important to the ministry of the gospel. Empathy is the ability to understand and share the feelings of another. The ability to understand and share the feelings of another. A lot of people can understand. Some of us don't even take the time to understand the feelings of another, and some of us are not even thinking along those lines, but to both understand and share the feelings of another. Empathetic people make a huge difference in the lives of hurting people. You want to make the difference in the lives of a hurting person? Then understand what it means to be empathetic. Empathy enhances existing relationships and starts new relationships off on the right foot. If you look at your marriage, you look at your relationship with your children, look at your relationship with your grandchildren, ask yourself this question. Is there, not now, but at the end of this message, is there an ample amount of empathy going on in my relationships that are significant to me? I'm going to give you a homework assignment before you leave today to sort of challenge you and myself and push us in the direction of being much more intentional when it comes to empathetic relationships. So what's the actual enemy of empathy? If empathy is on one end of the spectrum and it's a positive thing, what's clearly on the other end of the continuum that's a negative thing? And the word that comes to mind is narcissism, selfishness. If you're narcissistic, you are self-centered. If you're empathetic, you're not self-centered. Narcissism, what is this? If you've ever been called a narcissist, that's trouble, man. You're in trouble. Something you're doing is about you and you alone. Narcissism is a killer to the kingdom of God, to any ministry. I was at a preaching conference in Boston recently. I was listening to a guy by the name of John Acuff. Some of you have read his blogs. And he's talking about a chimney sweep up in the New England area. This chimney sweep would go to a person's house, and they would sweep out their chimney, which is an essential thing up there. You got to do it. But he was having difficulty with repeat appointments. He would make the appointment, and the people would forget about it or cancel it, or he'd show up, and they wouldn't be there. They wouldn't confirm. And it got to be a problem because it was essential because he cared about his customers. He wanted them to get the full treatment. It wasn't just about money. He wanted to see his business go up, but he also wanted to see his customers taken care of. So he said to himself, how is it that I could get my customers to follow through with a follow-up appointment for a chimney sweep? And he finally dawned on him. Most of his customers either had a dog or a cat. So whenever he went to their house for the initial chimney sweep, he would take a picture of either their dog or their cat or both. He then hired a company to make a postcard with the dog or the cat on it, and next to the animal was the actual follow-up appointment date. It's funny. Almost every follow-up appointment he went to, he found the postcard on the refrigerator. Because empathetic people understand something that non-empathetic people don't. We need to care about what the people we care about care about. The world is full of people who care about others, but the world is not full of people who care about what people we care about. When you get on the phone with your 9, your 12, your 14-year-old granddaughter, she knows you care about her. What she doesn't know is if you care about what she cares about. That's empathy. When your neighbor not only knows you care about them, it would help also in going an extra mile if not only your neighbor, but your employees understand not only that you care about them, but you know what they care about and you care about it as well. Our daughter had an internship this summer in Atlanta. And at the end of her internship, she was supposed to sort of schlep the bag for the person making a presentation at this group of CEOs and presidents. These CEOs and presidents of these large corporations would get together and meet every now and again, and their topic happened to be how best to relate to millennials. They were having difficulty relating to their employees and getting the most out of them. Well, our daughter is sitting there sort of like carrying the briefcase kind of thing. And at the end of this thing, she realizes there in front of her is the CEO of Waffle House, for crying out loud. And all of a sudden, the person that she came to assist looks at her and says, "We'd like to interview you for the benefit of all the presidents and CEOs." And they said, "Abigail, how can employees best relate to millennials?" And she says, without hesitation, kind of runs in the family, "We millennials like causes. We care about our causes. And after hours, often, we have a cause that we care about. What we need is CEOs and presidents of corporations that care about our causes after hours, because we millennials tend to care more about our bosses' causes during hours when they care about our causes after hours." She called us on the phone. "Oh my gosh, I just counseled with the CEO of Waffle House." All pumped out. I have no idea if what she said is true. But the fact of the matter is, it looks good. She's counseling people on how best to care about what their people care about. Narcissism is an enemy of empathy. Self-centered people are egocentric. Self-centered people are not Christ-centric. Self-centered people are not other people-centered. Self-centered people miss the two greatest commandments. If you come between you and God, you messed up the first commandment. And if you come between you and God, and you and your wants and your comforts and your conveniences come between you and others, you've messed up the first two commandments and the most important of the whole entire scripture. So we don't need to be narcissistic, self-centered, looking out for self. We need to be empathetic. So how do we do that? Narcissism is in part a hindered ability to first understand one's own feelings and experiences. Therefore, empathizing with the feelings of another is difficult. Hey, by the way, if you're from the world's greatest generation or the one after that, don't accept the labels and the stereotype put on you by the world. You know, this whole idea that there are generations out there that don't feel anything, or they don't communicate emotion well enough, or they're not open enough verbally with those around them. They're not sensitive enough. Don't buy into that nonsense. Don't accept a label and conform to the pattern this world has set for that generation. You're a Christian before you're part of any generation. You should care about what people you care about. And you have emotions. Now, if you're truly a narcissist, I can beat on you for 40 minutes and you really wouldn't care because you have no feeling. But you have something in you, whether you have the gift of mercy, the gift of hospitality, whether you're sensitive, I don't care what your personality type is, you have the ability, a God-given, inhabited, incarnate ability by the Spirit of God to care about other people and what they care about. And to that extent, you and I are responsible to be empathetic and speak empathetically in our life. So let's go further and find out how we do that. By the way, if you've been sitting in a church most of your life, sitting under some pretty decent teaching and this kind of thing, but you really haven't changed much, you haven't grown much, you know, that's kind of a problem. Has it dawned on you? That's a problem. Oftentimes, people don't truly change, or change isn't truly lasting for a lack of self-awareness. What do I mean by that? Look at 1 Timothy 4 and 16, up on the screen, I think. Watch your life, Paul's saying to Timothy, watch your life and doctrine closely. Self-awareness, not aware of self, self-aware. I'm aware that I'm here. I'm aware that I'm speaking. But am I self-aware about the conflicts that are going on between my inner world and what I'm saying? Am I self-aware of my weaknesses? Am I self-aware of my things worthy of celebrating? Am I self-aware? Have I examined myself? Do I know my tendencies? Do I know when I'm in trouble? That's self-aware. Many people are aware of self, but they're not self-aware. Self-awareness says, this is an area where I need to be convicted. Self-awareness says, this is an area where I need to be corrected. Self-awareness says, this is an area where I'm challenged. Self-awareness says, this is an area where I'm tempted. That's why we say examine yourself before you come to the table. Become self-aware. If we're not self-aware, we're not aware of the area God needs to touch in our life. I said self-aware, not other people making you aware. We've got no shortage of others in our life making us aware of the areas we need correction in. I'm talking about self-awareness. Timothy, watch your life. Self-awareness. Self-awareness, by the way, is one of the ingredients we need to be empathetic. If we know where we struggle, if we know where we're vulnerable, if we know where we need correction, we actually know how best to minister to other people and care about them and what they care about because of our shortcomings. Shortcomings become a positive if you're aware of them and you can leverage them as a way of helping other people. Become self-aware. 2 Corinthians 13:5, examine yourself, it says, to see whether you are in the faith. Test yourself. Or do you not realize this about yourselves, that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you fail to meet the test? Become self-aware. You know, it's not a bad idea every now and again, maybe once or twice a year, to sit down on some rock or some rocking chair or some log in the woods where no one can bother you and sit down and say, I need to become a little self-aware. Where am I right now? What's going on with me? What am I feeling? Oftentimes, people don't communicate what they're feeling, or they get labeled insensitive, or they lack communication skills because they've never afforded themselves the luxury of sitting down and actually examining themselves, and they don't really know what to say for lack of examination. Give a checkup to yourself every now and again. How am I doing in this area? What am I feeling? What am I doing over and over, expecting different results? Become self-aware. For those of you in recovery, this is a fourth step. Make a searching, fearless, moral inventory of yourself. Clean house every now and again. Become self-aware. A person who is self-aware has the ability to identify with areas that others are struggling in because they're aware of them themselves. Care about what the people you care about care about. I'll tell you what, if a woman comes to my office and she's just lost her husband and she's grieving, there's about five ladies in this church I would have absolutely no trouble whatsoever saying, why don't you consider walking this path with this particular woman? Why? Because she knows grief. Because she knows pain. Because she can care about what you care about in a way that others can't care about what you care about because she's been there, she's done that. That's why sponsors and AA are so effective. They understand the mentality of a drunk. There are some people that have lost a loved one after months of providing care for them, a caregiver. That has its own unique set of exhaustion and emotional complications. That has its own degree of overcoming in mourning and in processing the loss of a loved one. There are those who have done that. They can identify empathy. You don't want just anybody. Sometimes you need a specialist. Someone who's been there, done that, and got the emotional t-shirt. Christ was and is empathetic. When he saw, Mark 9:36, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they're harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. He had this inhuman, divine ability to interact with someone. And in doing so, identify with where they were in their life, oftentimes behind the mask. Mary washing his feet with her hair, the woman caught in adultery, the blind man, the paralytic, do you want to get well? The questions he asked were probing, investigatory. They were inquiries beyond the superficial. I tell you, I play golf with guys a lot, and oftentimes, the sum total of the depth of the conversation is whether to hit an 8 or a 9 iron. Yesterday I hit a 9 iron. I don't know if I'm going to hit an 8 or a 9 today. What do you think? Wow, that's deep. And I come back with an equally deep question. Have you ever hit a 7? Has it ever been that windy? Questions that Jesus asked revealed things beneath the surface. What are you afraid of? Here are some questions. What bothers you? What's your greatest regret? What have you missed out on in life? What's your greatest worry? When do you feel the most alone? Empathy. You don't ask the question, guess what? You don't get an answer. And our relationships tend to revolve around communicating somewhere between a 6 and an 8 iron. You and I are called to be burden bearers, empathetic people. As we said in communion, Jesus looked at that man on the cross. He saw something beneath the surface of the consternation on his face. He cared and looked closer than others had looked. He said, "Today you'll be with me in paradise." How is it that we foster this insightfulness? In Philippians it says, "Your love will abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight." We can ill afford to have love as some kind of panacea of superficiality that we cover things with. Love is knowing someone beneath the surface and loving them anyway, with all their warts and everything else that go on in their life. Empathy, caring about what people you care about. Christ was empathetic. Christ looks at you this morning. Man, we look good on a Sunday, don't we? He has the ability to peel back the outer layer and look underneath the worship song and see what's going on in the heart. Not to point out, not to mock, to identify with, to inhabit that emotion, to become one with your emotional exhaustion. If Christ came into this worship service and he lifted off the top layer, he'd see betrayal. He'd see celebrations that have yet to come to the surface. He'd see loneliness, bewilderment, confusion. In some, perhaps, contemplation of taking their own death. That's what's under there. That's what's under the carpet. To others, the fear of death. When he saw the crowds, he had a compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. He said, that's the funny thing about empathy. When you see that someone doesn't have a shepherd, they don't have a protector, they don't have a provider, they don't have someone to shield them or lift their head, care for them, the empathetic person finds a way to meet that need, typically emotional. See, the Word of God draws us into empathetic thinking and living. Hebrews 10, 24 and 25, let us think of ways, this is part of your homework assignment, let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. Let us not neglect our meeting together, as some people do, but encourage one another, especially now that the day of returning is drawing near. Galatians 6, 2 and 3. I like the New Living Translations. Galatians 6, 2 and 3. Share each other's burdens, and in this way obey the law of Christ. This is great. If you think you're too important to help someone, you're only fooling yourself. I love this sentence. You're not that important. What? You're not that important. The whole New Testament is building you up by this grace and this worth and this value and this ransom of the blood of Christ. And then every once in a while they'll slip in, "Hey, by the way, you're not that important." Hey, come on. I mean, take it down a notch, will you, please? Come on. Who are you? Feel something. I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of sharing in his sufferings. What? Mess up that beautiful verse with that sharing and the fellowship of his sufferings business. Carrying one another's burdens. Rejoice with those who rejoice, and weep with those who weep. Not a false, manufactured, manipulated emotion, but a way to identify with another person struggling that says, you know, I've sort of been there and I kind of get it. I get you. You may not have the answer, but you know what? Sometimes the answer is someone getting you. You don't feel so alone, ostracized, alienated. Worse yet, lonely. You know, there are times to say, I've been where you are, and there's times not to. But empathy knows when to say that. And it doesn't trivialize the trauma of a moment. You know, somebody's been through this horrific experience, and you go, I know exactly where you're at. I'm like, oh, don't say that. But empathy does. 6 months later, I do understand your pain, and I've been friends with it before. Carrying one another's burdens. Christ was and is self-aware. He says in John 10 and 30, I and the Father are one. He knows who he is. He knows who he's not. He knows his mission. He knows his calling. He knows his destination. He knows his death. He knows the means of his death. He knows his final resting place. There isn't anything Christ isn't aware of that's going on in his own life, and yet he turns his face like flint to Jerusalem and makes it his mission to fulfill the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. Right there. There it is. He knows himself. He knows when to go and when to stay. He knows when to lay back a day or two and when not. Very self-aware. And we follow him. He says, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? In other words, why are you more aware of that dude than you are yourself? You see him infrequently, and everywhere you go 24 hours a day, you're with yourself. Why can't you see the speck in your own eye? Become self-aware. Empathy. So I have a little homework assignment for you. It's on your handout this morning. If you don't have one, just get one before you leave. And the homework assignment is to engage, to intentionally engage this week in empathy-building conversations with at least two people, one known and one unknown, one person you know and one stranger. I challenge you in this. Go on a quest with a total stranger looking for a way to connect and care about them and what they care about. My grandchildren aren't, well, they're always old enough to do this, but it's easier with 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds talking to your grandchild on the phone, and you care about them, right? But do you care about what they care about? Do you care about the lyrics to their favorite song, and have you been on Google looking up the lyrics? Do you understand where their favorite band or concert's going to be next? Do you know their favorite television show? And have you watched it? Are we only talking about superficial things? Care about what those you care about. And you'll find, you know what? That they will care about you and what you care about. There's no better evangelistic ministry than to talk to someone who doesn't give a rip about Christ and care about them and what they care about. And the day will come, and believe me, it will come, when they will care about you and want to know what you care about. We make this so complicated. It's very simple. Intentional empathy-building conversations. Ask real questions of others that reveal real emotions, hurts, successes, challenges, and regrets. Read Proverbs 20, verse 15. The purpose in a man's heart is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out. Can you draw stuff out of people? Can you be that minister that draws things out? The things hidden, the things secret, the things rationalized. Can you draw meaning out of a person, the deep well of their heart, that reservoir? Can you draw stuff out? Can you be trustworthy with what they tell you? Empathy. The temptation is just to do something superficial, but forget temptation. Do something intentional. Have two conversations this week where you intentionally go fishing. Is there an area of your life that I can pray about? I mean, something serious. You can trust me with that. Show that you care. I know a lot of people say they don't care what you know, they want to know that you care. I think it's a step further. They want to know that you care and what they care about. Relate to a person to make a real connection through through your own self-awareness. Here's something that never happens. Become self-aware of an area and bring it out into the open and have a discussion with someone else. Do you see this in me? They'll go, yeah, you kidding? Yeah, I see that in you. I have every day of your life. Well, I just became aware of it this afternoon. Wow, that explains a lot. Be vulnerable. Share something. Become self-aware. Empathy. Let your questions outnumber your answers. I want you to think about having a blank piece of paper and a pen. Just sit there with God and say, answer these kind of questions as they come into your mind. What is it like to be 14? What's it like to be in a new school in a new town? What's it like to be betrayed? What's it feel like to be drifting in life? Here's a real one. What's it like to have a month to live? What's it like to lose your soulmate? To be pregnant and not want your baby? What's it like to live in inner city Chicago? What's it like to be lost? What's it like to be a single mom? What's it like to be an atheist? To be bullied? To be scared? What's it like to be broke? What's it like to be lonely or to have rage? What's it like to walk in depression? What's it like to be verbally abused? What's it like to be going through a divorce? What's it like to need a kidney? What's it like to have a prodigal who's left home? What's it like to be hemmed in by an addiction? What's it like to be a perfectionist? What's it like to be legalistic? Who asks these questions? And I just got... that was just one half of the sanctuary. You thought I was making that stuff up. That was just last week. What's it like? This is the question we should have on our lips more often. What's it like? The minister, the lover of a soul, the evangelist, the Christ follower. Ask this question, what's it like? What's it like to be a sheep without a shepherd? What's it like to get up in the morning and look back on your life and realize nothing you did has eternal significance? Feel that. Feel that. What's it like on the upside to get a promotion? What's it like to graduate finally? Find a new job? What's it like to get married and to fall in love? And what's it like to date somebody new? What's it like to be given a clean bill of health? We ask these questions too, because we rejoice with those who rejoice and we weep with those who weep. This is your calling in Christ Jesus. Care about what the people you care about care about. And remember the chimney sweep. We make ministry so complex. We make it so difficult. Like what strategy, what model? What am I going to do? I don't know how to do that. That's not me. That's not my gift. Yeah, you just took the bait. The bait of Satan. Makes this whole thing basically so complex. And Jesus, like, why are you people so complex? You love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love other people. Why are we on the 12th commentary of Exodus? What are we doing? Wake up. Love somebody. That's it. Love somebody. Care about what the people you care about.